Montana Hall in Vancouver, Washington. The theme of the 7th annual Juneteenth celebration is Together We Rise. This theme addresses the idea that together we rise above the fray of hatred, despair, and discord. The celebration features a job fair, panels, awards, contests, an art gallery, live entertainment, and more. Again, that's the 2019 Juneteenth celebration on Saturday, June 22nd from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. at the Clark College Hanna Hall, 1933 Fort Vancouver Way in Vancouver, Washington. More information can be found at KBOO.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
You're listening to KBOO Portland. Coming up next, it's Press Watch with Teresa Mitchell's weekly look at the news you're not supposed to know. At 9:30 on Fight the Empire, host Pear asks, where is our next war coming from, the White House or the Pentagon? At 10, it's the Heather McCoy Show, and at 11, it's Between the Covers. Don't forget that you can hear all these programs after they air on KBOO.fm or on iTunes and Google Play. All of these KBOO programs are made possible by member support. If you'd like to become a member, go to kboo.fm or use our mobile app and click on Donate.
This is Press Watch, a weekly counter-propaganda and left opinion program here on your people-supported free radio station, KBOO Portland. I'm Teresa Mitchell. Join me for a brief peek behind the video veil of monopoly media manipulation and an examination of the news you're not supposed to know. I have two very important guests right here live with me in the studio, and I'll be introducing them in just a moment, but it's about Extinction Rebellion, so stay tuned for that. Well, this morning, the White House is holding a meeting to discuss a response to Iran shooting down a U.S. military drone, which, of course, they allowed to float over the territory in the hopes that Iran would shoot it down. President Trump's not expected to attend the meeting right now. A U.S. official talking to CNN said outgoing Defense Secretary Patrick Shanahan and incoming Acting Defense Secretary Mark Esper are both expected to be there. And Secretary of State Mike Pompeo will also be attending the meeting. I'm not sure where Bolton is, but Bolton is running around trying to make sure the war happens. And they all have a handy key to their respective bunkers, you can bet. This week in whiteness, ethnic cleansing operations are to expand dramatically against brown-skinned persons, according to President Trump's statements this week. A roundup, he says, of immigrants. And Danny Glover and Ta-Nehisi Coates have addressed Congress for long-denied slavery and Jim Crow reparations, only to be rebuffed by Mitch McConnell. Meanwhile, the rope burns from a lynching of a transgender African-American fade in the morning rain here in Portland on a tree in Rocky Butte. Tomorrow's summer solstice. The earth ceases its summerward tilt and begins to move this hemisphere away from the sun. But the hottest months are yet to come. On this continent, the rain is bouncing off the tents and tarps of our disinherited fellow citizens in Portland as they keep an eye out for the uniformed aggressors and their trusty tent snatchers. Faintly, hi, y'all. Sorry about this. Faintly overhead, one may hear the roar of twin jet engines pushing private jets to inaccessible airports. They're not looking down at you, though. They're having a hot shower and a marble bathroom with gold-plated features, because you can get that on a Gulfstream 5. This week it's warmer in Fairbanks, Alaska than here. This sort of phenomenon has been consistent. The sharper edge of the global disaster is in sight. It will start off as a clear day. Commuting will go on as usual. The power will be off as the power lines sag in the wilderness, starting fires. The midday heat will rise and rise, exceeding 110, and there will be no place to go. The next day will be the same. And the next, the heat will permeate every building, preventing sleep. This will overwhelm my flabby 60-something body. I will die. You may die. At least I got to live for three generations. What about our beloved children? How long will they survive, and in what condition? Well, today, I'm speaking with Sarah Carlberg, Extinction Rebellion, and Shanice Clark, an organizer with Sunrise Movement. Welcome.
Thanks for having us.
Yes.
My pleasure. And I would like to know what's going on with Extinction Rebellion. Who shall I start with?
Sure. My name is Sarah Carlberg. Okay. I'm 33 years old, and I joined up with Extinction Rebellion because I have three beautiful babies, and I'm very worried about their future. Extinction Rebellion is an international organization that uses nonviolent civil disobedience to create radical change, to avert the worst of ecological collapse and mass extinction due to climate change. And we have started up a chapter here in Portland just a couple months ago, and we're building a ton of power, and you're going to be seeing a lot of us around town. Especially tomorrow, we are stepping out into the city in a big way with Partners 350 and Sunrise Movement. So Shanice is here as a partner with Extinction Rebellion, representing Sunrise Movement.
Tell me about the Sunrise Movement, Shanice.
Absolutely. Sunrise is building a movement led by young people to stop climate change and create millions of jobs in the process. I joined Sunrise because I can't prepare my students for their future while they're actively being pushed out of their neighborhoods. And for decades, working class communities and communities of color have been the first to be hit by pollution and the last to be rebuilt after climate disasters. And enough is enough. We're in solidarity with Extinction Rebellion because we only have 12 years to transform our economy, to preserve our climate. And we need to stop calling it climate change, because it's truly a climate crisis, a climate emergency.
It's a climate emergency. And 12 years is such an optimistic view on the length of time that we have to completely re-engineer our society in order to avert the worst of climate catastrophe. We've had some news just in the past week that scientists have seen permafrost globally melt at rates they weren't expecting until 2090.
I wonder if you saw the same article I did. It was pretty shocking. Are you talking about the one where the scientists went to an area that they'd seen before, that, which had been in permafrost, and they dived beneath the clouds, and you know, and holy hell, there's hummocks.
Yeah.
Not only has it melted, but it's rolled up into little hills because the permafrost is gone in that section of, what was it, Siberia?
Yeah, and if you're seeing the pictures out of Greenland right now, their ice sheets are melting. There is a very gorgeously shot but devastating photo from the back of a dog sled showing the dogs running across what looks like the surface of the ocean. The melt rates are happening much faster than we thought they would, and trapped within that permafrost is methane gas. A greenhouse gas that's going to create feedback loops wherein we may have a runaway climate change really quickly here. So we don't have a lot of time, and that's why you're going to be seeing organizations that previously have sort of been sitting back and taking a nice guy approach to working with our friends in the government, joining up with the more radical elements like Extinction Rebellion and taking to the streets in a big way. It's time to get out there and get real about the crisis.
I guess the tone is in the name, Extinction Rebellion. Tell me more about the international organization. Now, I understand that in Britain, society has been stopped cold by the size of the... are they strikes, or are they just demos in the streets?
Gosh, what word would you use to describe thousands of people coming out and shutting down bridges and the metro and staging a mass party in the street to show that saving the world can be joyful at the same time that we got to shut down business as usual. Yeah, so on Earth Day this year, Extinction Rebellion UK launched a mass demonstration wherein hundreds of people were arrested. The pictures out of those demonstrations were just inspiring to me in a huge way, because I don't know about y'all out there, but when you're sitting at home alone reading these headlines, it can feel very hopeless. And then when you scroll down Facebook and see thousands of people shutting down the streets and willing to get arrested in the name of declaring a climate emergency and getting working on it, suddenly I have hope, and suddenly I feel like we have a fighting chance at this thing. Yeah, so that's what's been going on in the UK. It inspired groups to pop up all over the world. There are groups in India, on the African continent, many here in the US. And one of the strongest groups in the US right now is here in Portland. So the Extinction Rebellion PDX chapter is making big waves and planning big things. So tomorrow, we will actually be out downtown at Terry Shrunk Plaza with Partners 350 and Sunrise Movement. And we will be holding a rally for the people to declare a climate emergency. We are no longer going to wait for the government to do it for us.
That looks to be a pretty big rally. Now, do y'all anticipate shutting down Portland in a way that you've shut down London?
Extinction Rebellion is an organization that promotes and uses the language of civil disobedience to speak truth to power, and to also communicate about the severity and scope of the emergency to the larger population. So I'll just leave it at that. We do believe that that is a language that most of us are fluent in, and that it's a powerful language to use when we're facing such an emergency.
All right. Did you want to add to that, Shanice?
Anybody who says these things take time, or that it's too ambitious to move to 100% clean and renewable energy by 2030, I think come from a place of privilege. People yes. are starving on these streets, including our own streets. And
that's right.
It's absolutely time to wake up and call upon our elected officials to act with a sense of urgency and start telling the truth about what's really happening.
That's right.
So it takes some things by implication. I mean, these very large actions and these militant street shutdowns tell me that you believe that business as usual is not going to address the climate crisis. Would that be a correct assessment?
Absolutely.
So, well, for example, I noticed that Canada recently declared a climate emergency, which sounds good.
And then?
But did not allocate funds for the action. Is that correct?
And that's correct. And then also, just days later, approved the Trans Mountain Pipeline. Yeah. So, you know, we have a lot of lip service happening, and Extinction Rebellion and Sunrise Movement and other organizations definitely want to hold our governments to account. They cannot simply declare a climate emergency and then walk away and continue fossil fuel infrastructure projects.
But they would like to.
They would like to, but we will be there to shut it down.
All right.
We're not waiting for them anymore. We're asking them, we are demanding that they do their part, because we do need them to address infrastructure issues and things like that. But if they do not, then we will show up and we will shut it down. And I want to be clear, like, I sound really militant right now and, like, really radical, but, like, 9 months ago, I was a stay-at-home mom who was very terrified of public speaking. Like, when my children's education was stolen out from under them through budget cuts, I didn't chain myself to the desk of anybody at, you know, the school. I just want to kind of drive home that, you know, I may sound militant, but this is a call from a mother who is desperate for action. When I read the news and look at the future that myself and my children might face, I can't sit by. So if it takes shutting down some streets and chaining myself to some stuff in order to fight for a future that's livable to them, I have to be able to look them in the eye at night and tell them I love them and that I'm doing my best to protect them. So this is kind of where we've gotten to when the crisis is so severe.
Absolutely. And there are people from all walks of life who are in both of these organizations. And for me personally, I know that young people have been continuously shut out of the political processes that shape our day-to-day lives and our futures. And frontline communities have continuously been excluded from decision-making tables that determine our interaction and engagement with fossil fuel industries. So having the people at the table and declaring that we are watching is an important statement that we're going to be making tomorrow and beyond.
Okay, well, I want to correct something I said before the accelerated permafrost melting that we were referring to earlier was actually just north of here in Canada. Now let's talk about these means again. We almost had the valve turners, or a valve turner on here. And just to repeat, in case you haven't heard of the valve turner phenomenon, a group of people who very carefully researched what they were doing and how to do it without destroying the system they were working on went to several large pipeline petroleum valves and shut them down in the sequence, in the only sequence in which they could be shut down physically without bursting the pipes and creating a god-awful mess. In doing this, they were showing that, I can't speak for them, but my take from it was they were showing that the supply of petroleum is truly massive. It is is below the liminal perception of most people in their day-to-day doings. And it must be shut down. And their action was rather desperate because they risked spending the rest of their lives in jail. But there was also another implication, which I think that they would not agree with me with, but one that I took away from them, which was because this is emergency, we have the right to shut down those valves.
That's
we have the right to
we
save
have,
our
it's
lives.
It's a necessity that and, we act in this way.
And that would have been, you know, if it had been done in any different way, it would have been violence against an infrastructure. Is it immoral to restrict the saving of the earth only to nonviolent means? Anybody want to take that one? And I know that you're not restricting only to, but your movement is nonviolent.
You know, the moral and ethical question of nonviolence is one that I think is interesting. I actually think it's more a question of strategic building of a movement. And this is very difficult for me. I'm a really emotional person, but when it comes to a problem as devastating as the potential impacts of this climate emergency, we have to be as strategic as possible. And I do not think that the use of violence is a strategic way for us to build a mass movement of everyone around the world, a popular movement, which is what we need in order to make the change that we need to at the rate we need to make it. So for me, I may have my own personal and ethical feelings about nonviolence, but I do just believe that is actually the most strategic course of action. I don't mind being violent against machines and fossil fuel infrastructure, but when it comes to how we interact with each other in the movement and with those whom we're compelling to act, we will always be nonviolent.
Absolutely. And there should be a value for restorative justice and restorative work in the movement. And part of it is healing each other and building our community up. And as a person of color, perpetuating violence against other folks is something that I understand to be taking us back. And it doesn't bring us towards the goals that we're working towards.
One of the other things I do want to put in really quickly that, Shanice, you're reminding me, I believe that Sunrise Movement and Extinction Rebellion are really strong at, is recognizing that to fully face the climate emergency and face a future of ecological collapse and mass extinction, including the potential extinction of the human race, it's very traumatizing to look at that and to fully grok it, if you will. And we have to take care of each other. And we do a lot of work in Sunrise Movement and Extinction Rebellion to institute regenerative practices where we are taking care of each other and ourselves, because this is a long-term work that we are going to be doing together, and it's really hard.
You mean work. You didn't get a bunker pass? You don't have the code to the door? I'm interested in Extinction Rebellion's take on cap and trade. Who wants to take that?
Extinction Rebellion does not actually take a stance on individual policies. We are demanding a political process be initiated by which the government declares a climate emergency and sets their goals on net zero carbon emissions by 2025. And then also that we focus our transition off of fossil fuels to be just and equitable for all people. And to accomplish that, we demand that community assemblies be put in place to provide oversight. So when it comes to cap and trade and HB 2020 and any of those things, what we would like to see is frontline-led organizations being at the table and able to assess all of these different policy proposals and how they would impact their communities and all of the other communities, and then being able to make determinations. So we're not here to arbitrate that. We're here to create the process by which frontline communities can take the lead on those policies.
This again seems to imply that the process as it is, since it is firmly in the hand of the billionaires,
yeah,
is something
has
that you
the most resources.
Something that y'all don't expect to move quickly enough, if at all, on this, and certainly the history would bear that out. I want to talk with y'all some more about the stakes involved, state of the earth today. I was looking at the air that has come into this region, and I was commenting as we started that it's warmer in Fairbanks. Talk for a moment about what we're already seeing. Talk about the state of the earth. What about these hurricanes? What about that hurricane? Was it Harvey that just pulled into Houston and sat on the ground and continued to spin and drowned that town?
I want to talk about the campfire.
Okay, that's a good one.
Because it affected me really personally. You know, 9 months ago, or however, back in October, when something called the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, which I had no idea what that was, put out this very scary report saying that we had 12 years to change our whole global economy and social system. I, like I said, was a stay-at-home mom, and that was very scary for me. And then not a month later, the most devastating wildfire in California history ripped through the town of Paradise, California, and burned down the home of my dear friend, her childhood home, the home they'd lived in for 40 years. And the smoke and ash from their burning home traveled all the way up to Portland and filled my backyard and the lungs of my three children. And so that, watching my children stand at the back door and look into the backyard and ask me why they couldn't go outside, and I had to tell them that it was because the air was unbreathable, was a very devastating and personally impactful experience for me. And then to have my daughter find out that our friend's home burned down and have her ask me when ours would burn down, not if, when.
Perspicacious one, that one.
Yeah, and then to realize that I didn't have a good answer to that question because I didn't know, because it is highly possible. Why not? It happened to my friend. So that is just my personal story of the present impacts of climate change. Shanice, I'm sure you have your own to share.
There's so many. You know, my family is from Jamaica, and year after year, there is a state of fear, wondering how the rain season and hurricanes will be impacting and displacing our family members. And to name and center one is difficult. And more recently, we, you know, lost 3,000 people in Puerto Rico from a hurricane, which is, you know, almost as significant as 9/11 for this country, mm-hmm. all those people. So I think there are a number of Sunrisers who have come to the state of Oregon because of being impacted by hurricanes. And I absolutely think that there is a close and national or local and national impact that folks feel, and our backyards are burning. We just heard Sarah's story, but places that are historic to us, mm-hmm. And our own backyards are slowly disappearing. And as a person with asthma who has really lived in a place that had a lot of congestion, a lot of emissions in the air, I have learned what it really means to not look at the impacts of growing dependence on the fossil fuel industry and how that disproportionately impacts folks of color. Black youth are 10 times more likely to die from asthma. And the way that these things impact us are definitely a racial issue and a climate issue, so intertwined. That's why I became an organizer and am passionate about addressing injustices and environmental policy and environmental areas, because I understand that frontline communities are being disproportionately impacted by these issues and not at the tables that are really imperative. That's why I'll be there tomorrow.
Nice. Tomorrow, the big rally, and it's at Terry Shrunk. That's on 3rd Avenue, right?
4th and Madison.
4th and Madison, okay. So that's where it is downtown. Basically, if you can get downtown, not too far from the river, you will find the rally. And here again, we are discussing this emergency, this action that must be taken, because the institutions that we have in place will do little more than... then make lip service. But times are changing. I got a list from the New York Times of some of the cities that are going to have to spend money pretty much immediately. They have to start spending this money now over the next decade or so to keep from drowning. Jacksonville, Florida's got to come up with $3.5 billion. New York City's got to come up with $2 billion. Virginia Beach, $1.7 billion. Galveston, Texas, $1.1 billion. Charleston, South Carolina, $1 billion. Tampa, Florida, $938.4 million, it goes on. But it's also broken down in cost per resident, and the list going from the top to the bottom shows how in some towns it just isn't going to be done because you can't get that right from the residents there. Mm-hmm. Galveston, Texas, for example, needs to take $21,000 from each and every resident to deal with climate change. Goodbye, Galveston.
Yeah.
Goodbye. You're going. Barnstable Town, Massachusetts, $20,000 from each resident? No. New Smyrna Beach, Florida, $14,000 from everybody there. Goodbye.
Yeah.
You're going away. Texas City, $12,000. They don't have $12,000 in their house. Gloucester, Massachusetts, $12,000 each resident. Dunedin, Florida, $10,000 each. Port Arthur, Texas, $10,000. These impacts mean that these towns are going to go away soon. They're going to go away.
Well, here's the thing. Residents, just regular people, we are not responsible for this.
Yes.
And the Portland Clean Energy Fund, I think, is a very great example of how to make a just transition to renewable energy and things that work better. Holding folks who are making billions of dollars accountable, wealthy corporations, and I think...
Are we talking a tax?
It can look a lot of different ways, but this particular example with the Portland Clean Energy Fund will tax businesses making billions of dollars, 1%, only 1%, and that will generate more money than we have ever really seen in a very long time for climate in the state, right here in Portland. So I think getting the money that we need to make this transition can look a lot of different ways. And also, people who are in these industries need to be held more accountable to the toxics and the harm that they are putting on to these communities. But the Portland Clean Energy Fund, I think, is a start in the right direction. And if we do more work that continues to center and hold accountable these billionaires that are truly perpetuating to our climate crisis, I think we can get there.
Okay. So the location and the time for the rally.
Yeah, so tomorrow's climate emergency declaration rally, where we the people will declare a climate emergency here in Portland, will take place at Terry Shrunk Plaza at 4th and Madison at noon. And we would love to see you there. We'll have speakers from Sunrise, 350, and other organizations. It's going to be some fun. It's going to be quite a show.
Okay, so do you have a band?
We have the Raging Grannies coming.
All right.
And then there are some things we have under our hat that we would not like to let out before you see them in
person.
Okay,
all right. All right. Well, then I hope that you dodge the cops ably. And if you would like to be there, then that's downtown, and that's tomorrow. And you can get this information as a podcast. This will be a podcast in 1 hour. Just pull up the KBOO website, go through the little prompts there until you find Press Watch, and you can hear the whole show again. So, again, I've been here with Extinction Rebellion. I'm here with Sarah Carlberg and Shanice Clark, and I'd like to thank you all for joining me and talking about this super important topic. You've been listening to Press Watch on 90.7 FM on our Eiffel-like tower on the hill and via KBOO.FM to all the ships at sea.
KBOO Community Radio is hiring a morning news and public affairs director, as well as an evening news and public affairs director to manage the news and public affairs programming. For these two full-time positions, we're looking for people with proven experience in audio production, management, and supervisory skills with volunteers, with an emphasis on teamwork in a collaborative setting, and the ability to work under strict deadlines. KBOO Community Radio is an equal opportunity and affirmative action employer. Women and people of color are encouraged to apply. The deadline to apply for both of these positions is Monday, July 1st at midnight. More information can be found at kboo.fm/employment.
Coming up next at 9:30, it's Fight the Empire. Host Pear asks, where is our next war coming from? The White House or the Pentagon? At 10, it's the Heather McCoy Show, and at 11, it's Between the Covers. Don't forget that you can hear all of these programs after they air on KBOO.FM or on iTunes and Google Play. All of these KBOO programs are made possible by member support. If you'd like to become a member, go to KBOO.fm.